and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. Listeners, it is impossible to ignore the ever-growing rise in writers taking control of their publishing career by self-publishing their work. A case in point is my next guest author, Philippa Nefri-Clark. Based in country Victoria, Philippa is a USA Today best-selling author of more than 20 books. Books that range in genre from crime thrillers to cozy mysteries and women's fiction. Earlier this year, I was privileged to receive a copy of book one in a new detective series by Philippa called Lest We Forgive, a heart-stopping book about an ex-cop's quest for the truth behind the car crash that killed his daughter and orphaned his granddaughter. I thoroughly enjoyed my first taste of this prolific writer's work, and I know I'll be delving into Philippa's extensive backlist in due course. So I'm delighted to have the opportunity to chat with Philippa on the podcast today. Welcome, Philippa.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you. Congratulations on book one in the Detective Liz Morland series. I really enjoyed my introduction to Liz and her ex-colleague, Vince Carter. How are you feeling about its reception?
Oh, I'm absolutely ecstatic. It seems to be hitting the right notes with a whole cross-section of readers. Certainly people who love police procedurals are enjoying it, but also people who just want a book with some heart, a story that's quite sad in parts but has a hopeful resolution. It just seems to be ticking boxes.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm going to touch on some of those sad aspects of this book because I found that so enthralling, just the way you got inside Vince's head in particular. But first, Philippa, I wondered if we could start with your inspiration for this story.
It's really hard to know where I get inspiration from anything. My husband often says, how? Just how do you do that? One of my very first book, The Station Master's Cottage, that's an easy one because I live next door to a station master's cottage, so my imagination was able to go wild. With Lest We Forgive, I had always wanted to explore the theme of carrying so much guilt around over something that really was outside of your control, that it changed you as a person, at least on the outside. And so I kind of looked for a vehicle so that I could make that actually come together. And strangely enough, I've always enjoyed John Wood as an actor. I grew up in the era of Blue Heelers. I actually was on Rafferty's Rules as an extra.
And, wow.
Yeah. And when I started putting this book together, which originally was a screenplay a long, long time ago, about 17 years ago, he always was sort of in the back of my mind, especially physically, you know, a gentleman who was quite solid, getting on in years, very gruff natured, but really had the heart as well, but it could be buried sometimes.
So as mentioned in my introduction, this is the first of your books that I've read, and it appears that you enjoy exploring mysteries and suspense stories. So I wanted to ask you, had you been working your way up to a full-blown crime novel, or did this one sort of come out of the blue for you?
I love mysteries. I love reading them. I love watching them. I love particularly Australian mysteries when we have them, and British, very, very much. Big fan of British mystery television. I think it's just always been there. I loved Agatha Christie growing up. The Famous Five is really what I grew up on, and there was always a mystery and a beach, two things I love. Most of my books have a mystery in them. There's very few. There's a couple of romances that don't, but most of them do have a mystery theme in them. And prior to Lest We Forgive, I released a book called Last Known Contact, and that is also a Melbourne crime. It's a missing persons book, and Liz Morland appeared first in that, but it was like for two pages.
Yeah.
And I really loved Liz when she popped into that one, so it kind of led to her being important in this one.
Yeah, I love Liz too, and we'll talk about your inspiration for Liz a little bit later. Philippa, there's a dark underbelly to this story, organised crime along with a fair bit of police procedural details. So I was wondering, what kind of research did you have to do to bring this story to the page?
I'm very fortunate to know a couple of police officers and ex-police officers who have been extremely generous with advice and letting me bounce things off them. And, you know, good old Dr. Google has been great as well. Some information is quite hard to find, and I am always second guessing myself as to how accurate I am. The follow-up I'm writing at the moment, and it's even more intense, is a lot of forensics, and I'm like, I'm so going to mess it up. I hope I won't. It's a case of talking to people who are actually in that environment and have been in that environment. I think that's been the biggest thing.
Yeah. So were there things that surprised you in the course of conducting your research, things about the story that you possibly had to change as a result of the research that you uncovered?
I think looking back, when I started working, I had a mentor last year. I had Louise Guy work with me, and she then did the development edits for me as well. And she came across a few things that weren't sitting quite right. So went back to the drawing board and restructured. Nothing pops to mind as such, but it would have been around procedural items that really were not going, they weren't correct. I was, you know, completely misjudging how it would be in that environment.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Now, one of the things that struck me most about this book, and we just touched on this a little bit earlier, was the level of grief that seeped into its pages. Vince Carter is a man who has lived the better part of his life crippled by grief over losing his wife suddenly, and then his daughter is killed in a car crash, and he becomes the sole living relative of his 8-year-old granddaughter, Melanie. And he's almost been living as a recluse when he learns of his daughter's death, isn't he?
Yes, very much so.
So how did you get inside his head, Philippa? Because essentially he goes from someone who lacks the will to live in many ways to someone who has to pull himself together and become the sole carer for his granddaughter.
It was a hard journey for me. However, Vince was always very clear as a character. He was the one that I built the whole story around. Anytime I would get stuck on how he might react to something, I would go back to, all right, if this had happened to me, but then someone else came into my life who needed me, would their needs outweigh how I felt? And he's a very good person at heart, a very good person who has suffered greatly and has had no capacity to work through these things. And, you know, being a man, being an ex-police officer, so he's been in the environment of needing to be outwardly very capable and tough and all of those things. And some of that training to me would have risen as well, that his need to protect his granddaughter, and that was from everything, from grief, from the people that were trying to take her from him, from everything that she'd had to deal with. I felt that Vince would be able to rise above it, at least on the outside. To begin with, she was always the light that came into his life.
Now, you mentioned John Wood as being, you know, somebody that you were thinking of when you initially started writing this story. Was Vince modelled on him in some ways?
Knowing John now, I have spent some time with John this year, but it really was just probably seeing him from a distance a couple of times when I was on Rafferty's Rules, and then seeing him on TV and on stage over the years. I think it wasn't John. It was probably a kaleidoscope of pieces of different things that John has done over the years. And John in person is someone that I think you could rely on if you needed someone to have your back. That's my impression of him anyway.
I think we've spoken around the events of this novel a little bit, but I was wondering if you could tell us more about the story.
We have Vince Carter, who's an ex-police officer. He left the police force because he was burning bridges with the way he treated other police and his job after he did lose his wife. His own daughter was only about the same age as Melanie, his granddaughter, when his wife died. So he raised a little girl on his own with his job. She used to go into the police station sometimes and work in a quiet corner when there was no other way, you know, for him to manage his life there. But over the years, he actually pushed her away as well. And he never liked, well, he did. At one point, he did like her husband, but then he decided her husband wasn't such a good person because her husband got involved with a business deal and Vince was never happy about that. But anyway, that's kind of all the backstory of it. But the story itself is about a car accident that leaves Melanie as an orphan, and Vince takes her on. Vince lives up in the country. He's got a little cottage that's run down. It's horrible. It's cold. It's the middle of winter. And this little girl with a broken arm comes to live with him. Unbeknown to him at that time, the person responsible for the car accident knows that Melanie saw their face. So there's a secondary story going on there, that there's, you know, a little girl that's at risk. At the same time, Liz Morland, who was his partner when they were both in uniform a very, very long time ago, and she was a lot younger than him. She's just in her mid-40s, whereas he's in his late 60s. But he was mentor as well as partner. And she's busy chasing an escaped convict at this point. And she's the only one who believes that he has a strong suspicion the car accident was no accident. So it's part amateur detective on his part and also part the police procedural. But there's a little bit of a twist as to how it all finishes. So I guess a mystery has to have a twist, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And this one was a cracker. It really was terrific. Detective Liz Morland, she is a fascinating character. She's extremely loyal to her ex-colleague, Vince, and in many ways acts as a go-between for Vince in his quest to uncover the truth behind his daughter's untimely death and the accident. Liz is tough but empathetic, so I wondered if you could tell me your inspiration for her.
Yes, she's a bit of a tough cookie, and she's got a really interesting backstory which comes out in the next book, so I'm not going to touch on that too much. She is very loyal. She plays things by the book. She strongly believes in due process, and she's someone who's worked her way into homicide, loves her homicide job, doesn't want to do anything else with her life. And she epitomises to me what a decent police officer is.
I just want to go back to Vince a little bit. He has to come to terms with some confronting issues over the course of this book. And it seems to me that he's carrying a lot of guilt around the death of his wife. And then there's the estrangement from his daughter.
Yeah.
How does somebody come back from that?
Well, I don't think he would have. Really, you know, if it wasn't for Melanie and him having to take a step back and revisit his responsibilities and what he wasn't responsible for and see things in a new light, I think he would have just eventually drunk himself to death, or, you know, he would have let himself go to such a point that his health, it was already suffering. His only company was a old pony and his bird carvings. That's all he had in his life before Melanie.
Yeah, so Melanie does save him in many ways, doesn't she?
I think so. I think she does, yeah.
You've planned another book in this series. Is there anything you can tell us about this book?
I've actually got two more planned. The first one is titled Lest Bridges Burn, and this is about Liz more so than Vince. Vince does appear, but not in the strong supporting. Well, he's really the main character in the first book. It's a story about a little girl, a five-year-old girl, who disappears from a suburban park right under her mum's nose. And the little girl comes from the same building that Liz lives in. And Liz has lived there for very long time, about 11 years, and she doesn't want to move because she believes someone might come back. I don't want to give too much away at the moment, but there's a corresponding story in her past that brings a lot of concerns and parallels for her to deal with. We see Liz go from this very toeing the line police officer to someone that will make some decisions later in the book that may seem out of character.
Yeah, sounds like it's a little bit too close to home for her, this case.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Philippa, with Lest We Forgive, the structure of the book was really interesting. There were so many different points of view, plus some chapters from an anonymous point of view. So I wondered if you could tell me about your decision to structure the book this way.
Books are such interesting things. Some just lend themselves to one main character. I tend to write from multiple points of view. I'm very comfortable with that. I love getting inside the heads of characters and only letting them reveal what I want them to at any given time. I felt for this book, and this was something that I did look at very closely, whether I had too many characters, and it was something Louise and I talked about. I did actually cut a few out, believe it or not. I felt because of the style of book, it really needed to have more input from the good guys and the bad guys, if you like, so that it hopefully gave a little bit more doubt about some of the motives and behaviours of some of the characters.
So, Philippa, if there was one thing that you would like readers to take away from this book, what would it be?
I don't want to sound as if I'm coming from some esoterical space, but I believe that there's always hope. And for me, this book had the theme of self-recrimination, but it also had the theme of self-forgiveness and hopefulness. And I guess even through the darkest of anything, there's usually a way forward. And sometimes it comes from the most unlikely place. And you just have to grasp hold of the good sometimes. I think that's what I'd like people to take away from it, that in spite of great grief, there can be a time ahead of great happiness.
Philippa, I was delighted to learn that John Wood narrated the audiobook for Lest We Forgive.
Yes.
And you talked a little bit about spending some time with John Wood earlier in the interview. And I listened to a sample of the audiobook and I thought he did such an excellent job.
Oh, thank you.
So tell me, how did that come about?
I really thought for a long time, do I even want to invest in an audiobook with a new series? I mean, it's a big expense for an indie author at the best of times. I've done a few, but it occurred to me if I was going to do it properly. Lest We Forgive had been sitting for a long time. All of last year, after it was ready to be published, I sent it off to a heap of publishers. I was given 4 offers on it and I still decided to publish it myself. And so I thought, I only hear Vince in my head as John Wood, so let's ask him if he would like to narrate it. So I just tracked down his agent and she was fantastic, sent him a copy of the book. And initially I got a note back by his agent saying, I've read the first few pages so far. I really love the story, but there's a lot of women. Do I have to do funny voices? And John had never done an audiobook except his own memoir. So it was a big learning curve for John, and he was very generous. He made time in his schedule. He's got a few things on the boil at the moment. We selected a studio in Melbourne that he was comfortable with, which was Square Sound in, have to give them a plug, in Port Melbourne. And we were down there for, we did 6 days of recording.
You talked a little bit about, I introduced you as a self-published author and you've just spoken about the fact that Lest We Forgive had 4 offers and you still decided to self-publish this book. So I wondered if you could tell us about your decision to become an indie author. Was this a conscious move or a product of circumstance?
I think there was a bit of both. It was 6 years ago I had my first book ready to publish and I had probably like most people, thought, well, I'll find a traditional publisher. Started to dig around. Someone I knew put me onto an agent and said, look, you can phone this agent. That's how she prefers to be contacted. Phoned, left a message. She phoned me back and her first comment to me was, what is your education? How are you qualified to be published? She knew it was for a fiction book, and I found it extremely intimidating, actually. I left school when I was 14. My family had serious health issues, and I left and became the breadwinner at the age of 14. So my education is just, you know, it's what I have learned over the years. And I did feel a little bit uncomfortable with that. So I took a step back, and my older son, who is now in his 20s, but back then he was a teenager, said, come on, we're going to self-publish. And I'm like, but I don't know how. So he formatted the book for me. He helped me upload it to all the retailers. So I had it with Apple and Amazon and Kobo and everyone. And I found a beautiful cover designer who has worked with me for 6 years and did Lest We Forgive. And I really enjoyed the process once I got over my fear of technology.
That's an incredible story. All the more remarkable that you've managed to publish so many books. It's just astounding how prolific you are. So what would you say was the best thing about being an indie author?
Overall, I love the control. I'm very good at from the management side of things. In my previous life, I've been a marketing manager and a store manager, and I actually enjoy the whole project management side. So I like being able to have the editor I want, the proofreader I want, the cover designer I want, and to be able to change my prices or apply for a promotion. So that overall is the thing that keeps me putting books out as an indie author, and I just love the freedom, I suppose, that comes with it. There's definitely some downsides, but there's a lot of upsides.
Yeah, fantastic. I absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier before we started recording about the fact that another series you're writing was acquired by Storm Publishing, a new digital first publisher of commercial fiction. So I want to say formally congratulations. That's absolutely marvelous news. And I wanted to ask you, how did that come about?
That's really a great question. And it's the strangest thing, because I had sent them Lest We Forgive last year. I don't know how I came across them. I was busy sending it off left, right and centre. And I must have just seen their name come up on a Facebook post somewhere. And I'd sent it to them and forgotten. And in that short time, I'd made the decision I was going to indie publish it. So I was gearing up for that. I got an email from Catherine, I think it's Torsig. I'm really bad with pronunciations, who works with Oliver. And the two of them were the first two people actively working at Storm Publishing, or in owning Storm Publishing. And she was saying she was really enjoying the read, but she wanted to know if I would have a Zoom call about other options. And so we jumped on a Zoom call. And in the interim, she'd gone and looked at some of my previous books. And I think she was specifically looking for women's fiction authors at that point, and wanted to know if I would be willing to write a brand new series from scratch. And I was like, oh, tell me more. And she said, your River's End series, which was my very first series, the Station Master's Cottage and so forth, she loved that style and wanted to know if I'd revisit not the same characters as such, but a similar style, so the dual timeline, the historical and romantic women's fiction. And I've gone, sure, why not? I've got nothing better to do with my time, because I, you know, I already had a full schedule. This was just before Christmas, and between Christmas and New Year, I came up with one concept and sent it to her, and she's like, fantastic, write me some chapters. It took me 1 week. I wrote her 4 big chapters. I was so enthusiastic. And she got me to match up with Emily Gowers, who was new with Storm. And Emily loved the series or the first book, and they offered me a 3-book contract. It was that simple.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that story. That is just brilliant. And I know it's probably still very early days, but I wondered, has your experience with Storm so far been markedly different from your indie publishing experience?
It is in a lot of ways. What it is really different from is a mistake I made a couple of years ago of giving, well, I had a self-published series and I was burnt out, and I was offered a contract by a different publisher, and it was a terrible experience. I've just got the rights back, but it took a lot of money and an international IP attorney to get involved to get my rights back. And yet I was quite happy to jump into another deal, but it was so different from the beginning. It was a breath of fresh air. The process with Storm has been amazing. They're very transparent, they're nurturing, and they're supportive. And what is very different for me is not having to stress too much about the end result of the book, because they're helping me make the book as perfect as I can, which is what my editors that I pay to do as well. But this is more like a joint effort, because they're invested in it as well. And immediately they've been, we'll have this person for audio and we'll have that released the same day. Everything is just being done for me rather than me doing so much of it. So that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, look, that sounds like wonderful. After all of your hard work self-publishing, all those books that you've got, it sounds like a great support for you at this point in time.
It is. And I'm learning so much. It's helping me as an author. I'm learning little techniques and how to minimize some of the characters. Yeah, I've only got 2 points of view in this first book, for example. It's just lovely to have someone who says to me, it's okay, you're doing good, because you don't get that as an indie, except once the book is released, and hopefully the readers give that to you. Sometimes don't, of course. Yeah. But, you know, it is. It's a lovely experience so far.
Would you consider moving away from indie publishing completely?
Nope. No, never.
Very emphatic, no.
Very emphatic, no. No, look, I make a full-time living as an indie author. It's going to be a long time before I see any royalties from Storm Publishing, only because of the long lead time getting this book out there and then the long period for royalties to start flowing through. I've worked very hard my whole life to be in a position where I could write, and it took me 4 years to get to the point of being able to be full-time, and I'm not prepared to give that up just in case being traditional didn't give me what I have already. Some books I will always keep separate. I can do what I want with them. I don't have to fit within what a publisher needs. I can do what I know my readers love. I can also make decisions about having foreign rights here or an audiobook go to a different publisher. So I try to diversify, and I just have to make sure I don't over diversify.
You're a success in the hybrid model. You've got a foot in each camp, and I love that you're making it work for you.
Thank you so much. I'm just really thrilled that, and just so grateful that so many people have helped me. You know, I've found indie authors are very supportive. Many traditional authors are very supportive. And beautiful people like you are the voice for us so often. So thank you.
Oh, that's really nice of you to say. Thank you, Philippa. Philippa, given your extensive publishing history and your experience, and now you're a hybrid published author, do you have any tips for novice authors out there who may be looking to get their first novel published, or any tips about the writing process in general?
Yeah, I think if I was telling myself stuff a few years ago, I would probably suggest that I settle in first on one genre and learn the craft as well as I could by writing as much as I could, no matter how good, bad, or indifferent it was at first. Just learn the process of writing a full book. It's very different from a short story. It's different from nonfiction and from stuff we're taught at school. So learn your craft by writing, and don't be afraid to put that work forward when you're happy with it. I see people that go back and forth with a book that's already finished, ready for a good editor, and they keep tinkering away. And sometimes you've just got to go, come on, off you go, little bird, fly. And whether an author chooses one path or another to publication, and we do have great choices now because of Storm, because of Boldwood Books, all the digital firsts are actually offering not an easier way in at all, but more options, which I think is lovely. But whatever way an author wants to, believe in yourself and your process. There will always be a readership for you. You do not need to be Dan Brown or Colleen Hoover or Lucy Score, even though who wouldn't want to be? She's such a fun lady. But you can make a good living, if that's what you want, from being a big fish in a small pond, I guess, by having your readership that you can grow and they'll stay loyal to you. Keep a few people close to you, but always believe in yourself first, because you know what you're doing. And there always will be a readership out there for you, but just be a bit brave sometimes.
Be a bit brave. Gosh, that's just, that sums you up, Philippa.
Sometimes it's bravado. Most of the time I don't believe what I write is any good. I go through terrible highs and lows, and I think most authors do. It's natural, it's normal, and it's okay to feel that stuff. But at the end of the day, a time will come where you'll have a book that people will go, I love that. You know, where have you been all this time?
Yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And I'm sure there's going to be lots of listeners out there who connect with those words. Philippa, I've absolutely loved chatting with you today about Lest We Forgive and all things publishing and writing. I can't wait to read book two in the Detective Liz Morland series. Thank you so very much for joining me on Talking Aussie Books today.
And thank you for allowing me to come on and for taking a chance on a new author to you. And a new book. It means a lot.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading.